You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is David Meerman Scott.
Our thesis was, are the ideas of growing fans that we know in the entertainment world, Harry Potter, Grateful Dead, live music, are those applicable to brands? And the answer is absolutely, positively yes. And we found examples all over the place.
David is an internationally acclaimed business growth strategist, entrepreneur, advisor to emerging companies, and public speaker. He's the author of 10 previous books, including The New Rules of Marketing and PR, Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead, and his latest, Fanocracy, Turning Fans into Customers and Customers into Fans. He travels around the world to surf and hear great live music, and he's joining us this week on the On Brand Podcast. David, welcome.
Thank you, Nick. It is so great to be speaking with you, my friend.
Well, I am so excited to be chatting with you once again. We have chatted together when we've been speaking at some of those events around the world, as your bio just alluded to. But I'm excited. Not only do you have a new book out, but it is one that has a unique backstory to it that has you topping my parenting goals list. Talk a bit about why this book is different than everything else.
Yeah. So I wrote it with my daughter, Reiko, and she's now 26 years old. When we embarked on the research for this project, it was 5 years ago. She was 21. And she's been a fabulous, fabulous co-author because clearly different generation being my daughter. She's a woman, different gender. But my wife's Japanese, so Reiko is mixed race. And she did a neuroscience degree at Columbia University. So she comes at this idea of fandom, what we call a fanocracy, from the perspective of a neuroscientist. She's now in her final year of medical school. As well, we share different fandoms. I am a massive Grateful Dead fan. She's a massive Harry Potter fan. So we were a wonderful team because we have the same idea about what it's like to be a fan and how companies can grow fandom. But we come at it from utterly different perspectives. So it's been really, really fabulous to write with her.
Well, I love the differences that you pointed out there and the differences in fandom as well. And hers coming from the cosplay Comic-Con kind of. And that's one that in our family is very big as well, as I have a few Starfleet uniforms in my closet that my wife insists on reminding me that they're costumes, but I love that you, because I've never articulated this as well, because I grew up as a Star Trek fan, and kind of the convergence of the music world and Star Trek fandom, I realize I'm pointing at in my office right now. I have a framed LP of Mr. Spock's Music from Outer Space.
Leonard Nimoy's, that's awesome.
Leonard Nimoy's album up there. And I always talk about that as I kind of awkwardly segue it into my own work on branding. But I think you've hit the nail on the head, you and Reiko, with this book, talking about how fandom connects with this branding and marketing thing that we talk about.
Yeah, so we went into the initial research 5 years ago looking at the idea of we are massively passionate about the things that we love. I've been to 780 live music shows in my life. Yes, I'm such a geek. I keep a spreadsheet, including 75 Grateful Dead concerts. And Reiko, not only has she seen every Harry Potter movie, not only has she read every book multiple times. Not only has she gone to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter theme park in Orlando several times, gone to London to go on the studio tour, but she wrote a 90,000 word alternative ending to the Harry Potter series where Draco Malfoy is a spy for the Order of the Phoenix. And she put that onto a fan fiction site, which has been downloaded thousands of times and commented on hundreds of times. So we really dig into our fandoms, and we wanted to know, our thesis was, are the ideas of growing fans that we know in the entertainment world, Harry Potter, Grateful Dead, live music, and in your case, Star Wars, are those applicable to brands? And the answer is absolutely, positively yes. And we found examples all over the place. And I'd like to share one which I love, and it's Hagerty Insurance. They sell auto insurance. And I was speaking with McKeel Hagerty, who's the CEO of Hagerty Insurance. He goes, David, everyone hates my product. It sucks. Everyone hates auto insurance. Not only do they hate spending money on it, it's even worse if they have to use it because it meant they crashed their car. But Hagerty Insurance has built literally millions of fans because they do classic car insurance, and they've become part of the same tribe. They go to hundreds of classic car events in North America a year. They have a YouTube channel that people are into. They do valuation reports. So we've learned that any organization, any brand can develop fans, even a business that everyone hates like auto insurance. And they're going to grow by 200,000 customers this year. They're the largest classic car auto insurance company on the planet.
So I love that example, because I think that a lot of times whenever you talk about fandom and brands, you point to brands like Harley Davidson that are easily accessible in terms of fandom, because we see people walking around wearing them like Grateful Dead fans. But insurance is a great business, because that's always the question that seems to stop the conversation of, great, but I'm a plumber. Why would anybody be a fan of what we do?
Exactly. That's exactly what so many people said to us. That, you know, the pushback is, oh, I'm just a, and then insert, you know, excuse here. Two examples immediately come to mind. So there is a U.S. government agency that has tens of millions of fans. It's a U.S. government agency where you can be practically anywhere on the planet and see people wearing the T-shirt. 3 weeks ago, I was in the Seychelles Islands, which is a group of islands on the east coast of off the east coast of Africa, just north of Madagascar in the Indian Ocean. And I was walking down a quiet rural street, and approaching me was a young man wearing a NASA logo T-shirt. NASA has fans all over the world. They are a U.S. government agency. and for your idea, you know, I'm a plumber. I don't have fans. Well, we spoke with Dr. John Marashi. He's a dentist. And Dr. Marashi is a dentist in Southern California, a highly competitive market. And he told me, David, everyone in my market does the same thing. They all have the same websites built there's a company that does dentist websites, and it's all templatized. So we all look the same, and we all have the same before and after teeth photos, right? You got the smiling face with the dirty, crooked yellow teeth, and then the nice, clean, smiling, straight white teeth. And I needed to stand out. And so what I did was I recognized that I am a massive fan of skateboarding. And Dr. Marashi, in his office, has skateboards on the wall as decorations. And he said he started an Instagram feed. And he's got, last time I checked, almost 14,000 subscribers of his Instagram feed. And he shares photos in four categories. One, the dirty teeth becoming straight teeth. It's sort of ubiquitous in the dental world. So he's got that. That's table stakes. And then he's got photos of his family. And then he's got photos of him together with some of his customers. And then most importantly is he's got a bunch of photos of him skateboarding. And skateboarding in interesting places. And skateboarding wearing interesting outfits. He's got a bunch of photos of him skateboarding with a full-piece suit sporting a bow tie. What he's done, Nick, he's created a fabulous brand. He's the dentist with a brand. He's the skateboarding dentist. And it was all free to do this. It's just Instagram. And he's got a massive fan base. And he told me just from social media that he grew his business by 30% last year. And that's only the ones he can quantify, because he told me that those are people, then they come in for the first consult. He asks, how did you find me? Those are people who say social media. But he said there's also people who find him word of mouth. And many of those people eventually, before they come in, want to check him out, find his Instagram and say, oh, man, this guy's cool. I want to do business with him. I don't want to do business with those other dodgy LA dentist. I want to go to the skateboard dude. So, you know, you asked about plumbers. I haven't got an example of plumbers, but
yet.
I've got the dentist.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the seven dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's Nick Westergaard with two A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show. So I love that story, and I want to dive deeper into some of the steps, but I kind of want to sneak ahead to what you talk about near the end of the book. You talk about living a passionate life, and I think especially as you look at businesses that, you know, where you're the person, where you're the brand, and your dentist example makes me think of that, because, you know, I'm sure there was a little voice in the head that it was like people only they want to follow the dentist and see teeth stuff. They're not following right. me for skateboards, and I think, because it makes me think of you, because I know things about David that I'm not sure I know about others in the marketing space. I know that you're a Grateful Dead fan. I know of your love of NASA and space.
Yes.
And that makes you such a three-dimensional person. And it also means that when I bump into you, I can talk about those things. And in my own newsletter, I include every now and then, you know, something about Star Wars, Star Trek, Neil Gaiman reading, things that are part of my own fandoms. And I always think I have that same voice of, I don't know who this is for, but then I'm at an event and I'm talking to someone after I've spoken and they said, love your newsletter. And I thank you for the fun Star Trek updates. And I think, really? And they say, yes. And so it does connect people in this weird way.
And this was the thing that was surprising to us. And it was, we did a couple of years of research before we really decided in our minds that this is big, this is important, because if I boil it down to a wonderful quote that I will give my daughter full credit for, it's this: passion is infectious. Passion is infectious. So it doesn't really matter what you're passionate about. It can be Star Wars, it can be Star Trek, it can be NASA, it can be the Grateful Dead, it can be Harry Potter, it can be skateboarding. But that passion becomes infectious, because even if someone doesn't share that fandom with you, they're gravitated to you. And if you run a business like you and I do, you know, we have small businesses that we run, or Dr. Murashi, the dentist, he runs, that passion is infectious in the way that we talk about who we are. But we also learned that it bubbles up for people who work at big companies. If you hire employees who have passion, they're much more likely to create fans of your business. And I think of an example there with HubSpot. I've been on the board of advisors of HubSpot since the very beginning. I joined their advisory board in 2007. I was the first advisor. At the time, they had 8 employees, no customers, and beta software only. And now they're something like 3,000 employees, $6 billion market cap. They're going to do $650 million in revenue this year. And HubSpot, of course, being a sales, marketing, and customer support software platform. And so what's interesting about HubSpot is that they do hire for passion. And they treat their employees in such a way that they can express those passions at work. And for example, if you want to take time off, go ahead. There is no vacation policy. Take as much as you need. and as long as you do your job, take what you need. And interestingly, as we're recording this, just a few days ago, less than a week ago, HubSpot was named the best company to work for in the entire country by Glassdoor. And that's based on the ratings of HubSpot employees who say, I love working here. And one of the reasons they love working there is because HubSpot allows those employees to share their passions with people. And that passion is infectious. That helps to grow fans for HubSpot. And that's one of the reasons why they're growing so incredibly quickly.
I think that's so key, because I think, again, it runs counter to either the voice in the head or the voice of what everyone else is doing, what policy is. And it's there's not a lot of credence put into making sure people have time to pursue those things that they're passionate about as well, which can yield enormous returns, as you've just noted.
Yeah, enormous returns. So, you know, if someone's training for the marathon, they need to leave every day at 3 o'clock to train, fine. They'll figure out ways to make it up, maybe working on the weekends or getting up earlier in the morning, whatever it is. I mean, just let people do the things that they love. That passion becomes infectious. The fans of HubSpot love working with their HubSpot people, and people who work at HubSpot love working at the company. It's all part of this idea of what we call a fanocracy. And we chose that word because, number one, we wanted a word that hadn't been used before, where we could own the URL and that that it could be something that comes back to us. And the idea of a fanocracy is that the fans rule. You know, a democracy is a rule by the people, and a fanocracy is a rule ruled by the fans.
That's a great. I was going to ask about. I assumed all of the unique, naming stuff that you want to own the URL, but I love the meaning of that, and that you can't unhear that once you.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to hear you say that, since you are the branding expert, my friend Nick. But there's another aspect of the branding of this that I think you'll recognize because you know this story, but that I think a lot of people don't do, and that is, I did not trademark that name, Fanocracy. I made that name in such a way that, yes, I have the URL. Yes, I wrote the book. Yes, if you were to enter it into a Google search, you know, my stuff would come up at the top. But I would be perfectly happy if somebody wanted to create content using that word. And that's exactly what I did about 10 years ago when I pioneered this idea of newsjacking. And newsjacking, I did exactly the same thing. Made up word, own the URL, wrote the book. And the idea of newsjacking is when there's a news story that breaks and you have an area of expertise that is part of that news story, you create an instant blog post or YouTube video or something to get your ideas into the marketplace of ideas out there. And then you can get quoted in news stories, or people can find your products because you are in the news at the moment when the time is right as opposed to what most of us do, which is just send your stuff out when you're ready. Anyway, newsjacking, I did the same thing. Did not trademark it, did not try to assert my ownership over it, put Creative Commons license on the content that I created around newsjacking. And thousands and thousands and thousands of other people talked about newsjacking in blogs. People created agencies to do newsjacking. Conferences created around newsjacking. Every day, people using the hashtag newsjacking. None of that comes back to me, but the Oxford English Dictionary recently named newsjacking to the dictionary and put my name against it. And if you Google the word newsjacking, I come up at the top because I own the URL and whatnot. So as a branding concept, I think the idea of when you have a word that you allow people to use, which is another very counterintuitive aspect, it's a really interesting way to build fans because you're not saying, I own this, you can't use it. Instead, you're saying, you're letting go of your creation, which is actually a chapter in the book. You're letting go of your creation and saying, you own this. The fans own this. The fans of newsjacking own newsjacking, not me. The fans of the ideas of fanocracy will own fanocracy when that's out there, not me. And that's, I think, a very counterintuitive aspect of branding.
I think that's, you know, that kind of fits. I feel like we've said something similar to that, that there's a lot of this that is counterintuitive to what we would normally think. And yet we see the success of these fandoms, these fanocracies. You talked about letting go of your creation. The book details 9 steps to building a fanocracy, and I don't want to recap them all, but is there one in particular that is good to highlight?
Yeah, the one that I find the most fascinating is the one get closer than usual, and because this one's fascinating to me because it's rooted in neuroscience. I mentioned earlier that my daughter Reiko did a neuroscience degree, and what we wanted to do is dig into what's actually going on in your brain when you are a fan of something. So we spoke with a number of well-known neuroscientists to learn what's going on in our brains when we become a fan. And it turns out that we humans are hardwired to want to become part of a tribe because it's an ancient survival technique. It's a survival technique because when you're part of a tribe, you're welcomed and you've got a support structure. And if you run across somebody, you know, 10,000 years ago in the bush and you didn't know them, they were not part of your tribe, that's dangerous. So neuroscience tells us that the closer we get to someone, the more powerful the shared emotion, either positive or negative. If we know them, they're part of our tribe, positive emotions. If we don't know them, our fight or flight instinct kicks in, that's a negative emotion. So if I'm at a Grateful Dead concert, I'm part of my tribe, I can turn to anybody on my right or my left and instantly have a bond with them. Probably the same with you if you're meeting other Star Trek or Star Wars fans, right? Like you know the lingo. You're part of a tribe. You speak the same language. You know, it's really interesting because, and that's rooted in neuroscience because of this survival technique that we all have hardwired in our brains. So one neuroscientist named Edward Teed Hall identified the levels of proximity, how far you are to other people. The furthest being public space, further than 20 feet away. Our brains don't actively track people who are that far away. Inside of 20 feet, between 20 feet and 4 feet, is called social space. Our brains begin to track people who are in our social space because we need to know friend or foe. And then within 4 feet, that's actually called personal space. That's even more powerful. So if you're at a cocktail party, that's personal space. It's a very positive, powerful connection. If you're in a crowded elevator, you don't know those people, it can be a very negative connection. So this is interesting because we can use this concept in our branding, in our marketing, because we can bring people literally, physically closer together. have a client conference, meet people in their offices, any way you can bring people physically close together. And some people have said to us, but David, we don't have a business that's conducive to this idea of bringing people together. Maybe we run a virtual business, or we have clients all over the world. I can't meet with them personally. There's another concept, which is the concept of mirror neurons, which are the part of our brains that fire when we see or even hear somebody doing something as if we were doing it ourselves. So, Nick, if I take a bite of a lemon, oh my gosh, right? It's really powerful, man. It's like my eyes instinctively close, my mouth puckers up, my saliva starts to do its thing. I mean, biting a lemon is a powerful thing. And if I bite a lemon, my brain is firing like mad. If you were to see me bite that lemon, your brain will fires as well. And I would bet even by just having me talk about it, Nick, you may have felt
a little bit of lemon. I'm making a face.
End of your tongue. A little bit of lemon on the end of your tongue. So this is the concept of mirror neurons. So what we can all do to build fans, and this is what was so interesting that we learned around neuroscience, is if you use photos and videos and you crop them as if you're in the social space or personal space, especially personal space within 4 feet of people, that through the magic of mirror neurons, people think they're actually together with you physically. So that partly explains the power of Zoom, which has become such a hugely popular way for people to communicate these days, because you can look at somebody as they're talking, and that's really powerful because your brain tells you you're in the same room, even though you could be thousands of miles away. This is exactly why we feel we know movie stars. Our brain fires and says, we know that person on the screen, but you don't know them. They're a person on a screen, but your brain says you do. So we can use this as part of our branding if we make really interesting use of photographs and videos cropped as if you're within personal space, 4 feet of one another, looking directly at a camera. Replace the ridiculous stock photos on your website and your marketing and use real photos cropped in this way. Really, really powerful stuff to build fans, and it's all rooted in neuroscience.
That is fascinating, and again, it's not where I was expecting the step of getting closer than usual. It means literally, physically, yes. Closer. I love
it
that.
It does. It's literally closer, and if you can't, for whatever reason, your business isn't conducive to that, virtually closer, really powerful. In fact, this explains the selfie phenomenon. So many people, older people especially, dismiss the selfie as frivolous and only for kids. But in fact, a selfie is really powerful because our arm is 4 feet or less. So you're in virtual physical personal space of people. You're almost always looking at a camera when you do a selfie. It's among the most shared social media that many of us will have. You know, I'll go a full year and I'll look back on my Instagrams or my Twitter media. The selfies that I've shot are among the most engaged, the most liked, the most retweeted, and so on. It's because people's brains tell them that they're in the same room, cocktail party distance from you, even though you're not. Your brain tells you that you are. So this is powerful for branding. This is powerful as a way to build fans.
I love that. And as we talk about brands that we have a reaction to, as we wrap up, it is time for me to ask you the question I warned you about, because I knew we'd be talking about lots of brands that made you smile. I said, save one to share at the end. So what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Every time I think of Grain Surfboards, Nick, I smile. Grain Surfboards makes wooden surfboards. So I'm a massive fan of surfing. I'm not very good at it, but I'm a massive fan of it. And I also just love the beauty and aesthetic of wood. And I also want to do my bit for the environment. So I ran across an article in one of my surfing magazines about wooden surfboards. And I got really excited. Wow, wooden surfboards, that's cool. So I Googled wooden surfboard. And up pops Grain Surfboards. So I check them out. And this is a really cool company. You know, they've got a great website. You can buy surfboards for like $2,000. This is pretty neat. But then I found a page, you can build your own surfboard. Cool. Oh, my God. And they're located in York, Maine, which is 1 hour from where I live outside of Boston. So I looked in my calendar. Their next class was coming up a few weeks later. This was a couple years ago. And I signed up on the spot. It was like $2,500. And I went to the make your own wooden surfboard class. And it was 4 days and it was fabulous. And I loved making these surfboards. And I loved it so much, I went back a year later and made a second surfboard because the first one, I couldn't even ride it because I was afraid of ruining it. So I didn't want to ride it. And now I've got a second board and I frequently surf Nantucket Island. I've got a house there. And people don't know my name. They call me Wooden Surfboard Dude. And they're like, hey, it's Wooden Surfboard Dude. And the people who don't know me yet, you know, like, hey, wow, cool board. Where'd you get it? And I go, I made it. They go, you made it? Whoa, how'd you make it? And I go, these cool people at Grain Surfboards helped me make it. So that may have been more than you expected because you asked me a really simple question. But they really do make me smile. They're just a team of, I think, 5 or 6 people working out of a barn in York, Maine. And then they run 20 or 30 classes a year. And you go up and you hang with them and you drink beer and you listen to Grateful Dead. And then if the surf's up, you go out surfing with them. It's fabulous. And then 4 days later, you walk home with a surfboard that you made out of wood.
If all of that doesn't make you smile, I'm not sure what would. David, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
To learn more about me, I use my middle name for my business endeavors, my middle name being Meerman. So Google David Meerman Scott. This is a branding thing, Nick. David Meerman Scott. I'm the only David Meerman Scott on the entire planet, which is why I use my middle name. Lots of David Scotts out there, but there's only one David Meerman Scott. On the socials, I am DMSCOTT, DM Scott. And we have a site at www.fanocracy.com with videos and infographics and some PDF downloads and a bunch of other things if you wanted to learn more about the ideas of Fanocracy.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. David, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick. I really, really appreciate you having me on. Can't wait to actually be in close physical proximity with you, especially if we can be in personal space having a cocktail together.
I love that, and I see what you did there. Thanks again. And if you like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment, rate and review the show. Help others find it as well. For more on me, you can visit nickwestergaard.com. That's Westergaard with 2 A's, making me a little bit different than the other Nick Westergaards on the planet. And until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.